And I am sound checking, but I'm recording.
Check, check, check. Hello. Okay.
You sound great.
Thank you.
I think you should do a sound check in the voice of Rosen Island.
Well, I remember a time back in St. Olaf. How was that?
Good.
And that was perfect. That's all we needed. We're ready to go.
All right.
You just heard Darcy Drollinger, the drag queen who owns the Oasis, plays Rose Nylund in Golden Girls Live, and breaking news is San Francisco's first drag laureate. Heather, I love the timing of this, our way of saying drag performance is art in San Francisco, drag queens are our neighbors, and Darcy is a leader in this city.
Yes, yeah, so many other places around the country are bizarrely picking fights with drag queens, which I just really don't understand. But Darcy's amazing. We have such a strong drag community in San Francisco, and I think it was kind of a little thumb in the eye by Mayor London Breed to announce that the city now has the world's first drag laureate.
Every drag queen that I've met has been awesome in San Francisco. We're like begging them to come to our events.
We're not begging them, Peter. They want to.
They want to come to our events. This is great news. And Tony Bravo wanted to set this up before the news even broke. Tony joins us on this episode. I'm so glad we did it. Darcy is hilarious, but also a small business owner and a politically aware citizen. And no one pivots better from being funny to being really thoughtful, sometimes in the same breath.
Yeah, he's such a joy to talk to. We basically could have turned the podcast over to him, no questions asked, and it would have been just as good.
Yeah, I remember last time it was the same way. We almost had an entire episode of content before we even hit record. This is an Ask a Drag Queen episode, sequel to our Ask a Muni Driver episode, which went so well. Listen for that in the final third of the episode. Heather, what other Ask episodes should we have?
It'd be kind of fun to do Ask a NIMBY. Why do you hate housing?
Ask a NIMBY. Yeah, all of my questions would be kind of negative, though. I don't know if that's our vibe. I like Ask a Sewer Worker. I have a lot of questions for sewer workers in San Francisco. Ferry Boat Pilot. We met a ferry boat pilot, and I was asking a ton of questions there. Lucille. I don't know if Lucille is allowed to talk, but I have a lot of Giants mascot questions.
How about Ask a Dive Bar Bartender?
One important note, there's a lot of Kim Cattrall talk in this episode. It was recorded hours before news broke that Cattrall's Samantha may be returning to the expanded Sex and the City universe. There's no way I was going to cut it out, though, especially since Darcy gives the secret to the perfect drag Samantha voice.
Yes, we asked Darcy, who has played Samantha Jones in Sex and the City satire shows at the Oasis and is doing another one soon, if he would play Samantha on And Just Like That on HBO. And he seemed open to it. Maybe Kim Cattrall's ears were burning because literally like an hour later, she announced she is going back. I think she was like, oh my God, Darcy could steal my role. I better do this.
I still want Darcy to do it. Darcy Drollinger and Tony Bravo are coming up. I'm Peter Hartlob here with Heather Knight, who is one half Carrie and one half Charlotte.
That's true. I am one half Carrie and one half Charlotte.
And I am 100% Miranda. And this is Total SF.
Thank you very much.
Darcy Drollinger, welcome back to Total SF.
Well, thank you so much for having me.
Last time we talked to you, we were on the roof of the Oasis Drag Club, and you were preparing for an emergency telethon to raise money to save the Oasis. Congratulations on not only succeeding in that endeavor, but now you have an even bigger announcement, which is that you've just been named by Mayor London Breed as San Francisco's first ever drag laureate.
Ta-da!
Huge news. Has it sunk in yet?
It slowly has been. I think the whirlwind of press around it that became global sort of made me realize it was a bigger deal than I had anticipated. And so I got really excited, but then it was the daunting task of actually being the first drag laureate.
Oh, yeah, then
world.
You actually have to do
yes,
it.
Yes, I have to do it and figure out exactly what it is. You know what I mean? And it's one of those things, because it hasn't been done before, it can be as much as I can make it be. And that is an exciting task, but it is also, you know, standing in a room full of every kind of paint and not knowing where to begin painting.
Yeah.
Already we get the paint metaphors.
What was
a drag queen.
Exactly.
What was it like to apply for the position, and how did you find out you'd gotten the job?
Well, you know, they had sent out a press release about it happening, and of course I looked at what the criteria was, and it seemed like it made a lot of sense. And it made more sense to me coming out of the pandemic and all of the community building things that had happened and that I had done during that time. It really felt like the trajectory was there. That was the next step for me. I will say that I had a number of my employees tell me, don't you dare apply for this.
Don't add any more to our job.
Because you are so busy already. And but I did. And then didn't really think anything of it. You know, you went through the whole process until London Breed called me on my cell phone.
Oh, she called you directly?
Yes.
And
yes.
What did she say?
Well, I'm going to back that up. I found out that I was in the top tier, and I had to go meet with London.
Did you meet her in drag?
You know what? I was going to, but it happened to be 2 days after Heclina passed away.
Aww.
And they were like, we'd still love you to come in. You don't have to be in drag. And I look back at that, and while we had a nice talk, and it was, you know, kind of fun and cool to be in the mayor's office and talk with her, it's a real blur. I felt a little bit like a zombie. I was so numb at that point. And I can't quite remember all of our conversation. But, you know, I felt like it went as well as it could have gone in my case. Yes. And then, but then it was then a phone call, and having the mayor call you on your cell phone was pretty cool.
I'm hearing a lot about cell phones, but is there like going to be some kind of bat signal coming from City Hall?
When they really need the drag laureate.
Exactly. I love that. You know,
will there be a bat signal, and what is the bat signal?
Well, I guess that's the shape of a big wig. I don't know. Or a high heel shoe. Because it depends on what it is they need.
It could be like color coding. It could be like a high heel is level one, a lipstick is level two. If you see a wig, there the city go. Is on
emergency.
Fire.
Emergency.
I'm just imagining you on the roof of the Oasis, and then she could just put the signal up into the fog. It's kind of perfect.
Exactly.
And then
I excuse myself from whatever I'm doing, and then, you know, turn around three times in a Wonder Woman sort of way, and boom, drag laureate to the rescue.
All right, drag laureate.
It should be a comic book.
I love this.
Oh, absolutely. Oh, I can't wait to see who snacks and everybody else in the usual Oasis gang is going to play.
I love that.
All right, now drag laureate, I'm putting on my Rachel Maddow glasses because I'm going to ask you some serious policy stuff here.
Oh, God. Okay.
Don't worry. You're very smart in spite of playing Rosen Island. I have to ask, what is your plan for your first 100 days as laureate?
Wow, that is a loaded question. And I have been thinking a lot about what I want to do as part of this program. And I think, you know, I talk a lot about elevating the art of drag, right? And one of those is really advocating for nightlife, because drag happens mostly at night. Yes, there are drag brunches for sure, but even drag brunches are having some pushback in certain areas. So I think, you know, really working with the Entertainment Commission and the Nightlife Coalition, and really making sure that the places and the times where drag is alive and well, where it is an economy, are respected and nurtured, right? That's one thing I want to do. I do want to put on a large drag festival. Now, this drag festival, what I'd like to do is put on an outdoor big drag festival a la Wigstock, or, you know, Oaklash does that as well. I'd like to work with the Drag Time Story Hour, the Drag Story Hour folks, Story Time, sorry, and so that they can have a big component in that. But I also would like to do some trainings and make it educational as well. And I know this is kind of harsh to talk about sometimes, but it's reality, like active shooter training. How do you deal with conflict? How do you deal with conflict resolution in drag, in situations where people do show up with a weapon? Because here's the thing, sometimes those things may happen here, but they're definitely happening in places where there's open carry and things like that. And we may go to those places. Mm-hmm. I think that could be a festival that could happen on a yearly. Like, I could start it, but then it could be handed off to each drag laureate afterwards to continue to grow it and change it, give it themes. But that the San Francisco could have something like that, I think, would be really exciting. But that's one thing. Another thing that I know it's a bit of a pipe dream, and I don't know if it'll happen in the first 100 days, but I do have a dream, and that is to create a drag emporium in San Francisco.
I feel like this is where we there should be a respectful yas.
Yas! I, in my fantasy world, and a lot of times I've noticed that fantasies do come true, would love to take the now empty Bed Bath & Beyond store on 9th Street and turn it into the San Francisco Drag Emporium to create small or large shops where people, drag entrepreneurs, could create everything from shoe stores to clothing stores, wig shops, makeovers. And I think not only would it be a great way for this community to make a living and make money, but it would be a great tourist destination. When everyone came to town, they would want to go to the SF Drag Emporium. I think sometimes where there's a necessity and people think that it's important in the community, we can make it happen. I mean, it's got to take a lot of moving parts to make something like that happen. But that's another thing that I would love to do.
I love this idea. And can we record a podcast with you in the SF Drag Emporium?
Yes!
And can the Drag Emporium be the top four floors of the Westfield Nordstrom?
I would take that, too, if anyone's listening.
It was next door to where the Emporium itself used to be. You was a San Francisco native, probably remember the carnivals and the
Very
dome.
Accessible by BART.
You know, and I think that would be a great way to save that mall, which everyone's so scared about it, feeling like a ghost town in there. Think of the glitter and the sparkle Absolutely. And the joy. You know, where you walk in and I will survive and
jump through the... And then you need to paint the outside. It's kind of dreary looking.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. Pink?
Yeah.
Okay. Sure, sure.
The only other solution to that mall, I think, is to let Peaches Christ take it over and have it be an actual ghost mall with, like, the attraction at the Mint. I think no matter what, drag is going to save the city.
I think drag will save the city.
Drag will save drag the will city. Save.
I've got to ask, your drag mall proposal especially sounds like it's responding to some of the very real things going on up to the minute, especially the issue of retail closures and real estate vacancies. How much do you see the role having to respond kind of in the moment to some of these, let's call them crisis situations in the city as they develop?
Well, I mean, I think that I have a lot to say about a lot of things, and this gives me a platform. And being a business person and an entrepreneur and a drag performer, I do straddle a lot of different worlds, and I do think that I would love to be able to add my voice to the conversation around a lot of these things. And I mean, frankly, the only way we're going to make brick and mortar work again is if we all make the decision to shop at brick and mortar. But we have to have the avenues to create the stores. That's why talking about like the drag mall, for example, there is no big shoe store where you can go try on a whole bunch of shoes. If you're a drag performer, you can go to Cliffs and they have like four different styles and that's it. And they may have your size, it may not. But what if you could have an actual store that sold that and everyone agreed, we're not going to buy our shoes online anymore. We're not going to go to pleaser.com. You may sell all pleasers, but we're going to go to your store and you're going to buy it. And if everyone in the community said, I'm going to open this store. This is a store we don't have anymore. And everyone's spending money on Amazon. And we all made the decision to go there. I mean, Cole Hardware is closing. That should not close. And if everyone said right now, today, we are going to not buy anything on Amazon that you could buy at Cole Hardware and go to Cole Hardware, yeah. Cole Hardware would not close. But we're not doing that. And so I think collectively, you know, we're not all going to make that decision together, all of San Francisco, but communities within San Francisco can make that decision.
What was your initial reaction to the LA chapter of the Sisters of Perpetual Indulgence being disinvited, then reinvited by the Dodgers? I'm curious what you thought about it, but also what you think long term with corporations and how they're kind of weighing these things the way they are.
Dodgers suck. No, I'm kidding.
True.
No, I have
that's the title of the episode.
We actually just did a fact check on this. Darcy is factually accurate.
So, yeah, you know, as a San Francisco native, I have to love the Giants and I have to hate the Dodgers. And this is just the final nail in their coffin. I mean, it was just outrageous and so sad that they did that. I love that the power of the gay dollar could match or even trump the power of
Trump, so to speak.
Yeah, exactly. Of this, you know, right-wing religious dollar that was threatening them. I do think that we have to be applauded for changing their mind. And if we don't applaud people for changing their mind, we can't ever have anything change. Still, they initially took that stance, which, you know, just continues to show that there really isn't full acceptance for the LGBTQ plus community yet in that level, where it's like, if it was another organization, that would never have happened. But with this, there still is this weird space where it is like LGBTQ plus people's rights are up for debate, where it's not, those rights are not guaranteed. And it's just mind-boggling that is continuing and that it's become such a hotbed right now, which, you know, you can dance around with all the ideas of what you think, like why you think they're doing that, right? Is it a smokescreen because they don't want to deal with gun control? Is it a smokescreen for the Catholic Church who's actually being the groomers for so many of these poor kids? Like, I don't know what the reason this is and what they're trying to, how they're trying to rally their base around this, but it's very, very dangerous. And I know that I'm spiraling home to a different topic, and I don't know if that's okay.
Tony was going to ask you about that.
We're actually
that
just going to edit that down to the Dodgers suck.
Okay. So, yes, and by the way, the Dodgers suck.
We'll be right back after this short break.
No, but Darcy, it's you bring up something that you and I have talked about quite a lot in our reporting about drag at the Chronicle. The very real dangers that are facing the community. There have been interruptions of drag story hours here in the Bay Area. There are, at the moment, 14 states considering bans on drag performance. That's in addition to the Tennessee HB 30 ban, which passed. You were one of the organizers of the Drag Up Fight Back rally in response to that back in April. Has this role at all evolved to deal with the very real threats that are coming for the drag community right now, not just on a legislative level, but on an individual danger level?
I mean, yes. Running a large drag club has forced me to deal with this on a pretty much minute-by-minute basis.
And I remember when the metal detectors went in, it was fall of last year.
We had to, you know, when you see communities and bars and show spaces like ours, you know, where people are getting shot and killed, it suddenly, you know, I applauded my staff for even wanting to come to work the next day. So, A, I do it to protect them, but I also do it to protect the performers and the audience, you know. But, I mean, that is really a sad state of affair when you know, what we're doing is entertaining people. And drag has been around for centuries, for hundreds and hundreds of years. And suddenly now it is something that people are up in arms about. I mean, can you think about it? It's like, why is drag important? Well, why is theater important? Why is dance important? Why is film important? Why is fine art important? It's another art form. And until people can recognize it as truly as an art form, and I see it, it is truly an art form. What we are putting on the stage at Oasis is art. And to have people question it and not see it that way is another part of the tragedy around what's happening. My job, and I really saw this during the pandemic when things fell apart, like my job in this community, in society, is to entertain, to keep people's spirits up. Mm-hmm. And I don't want to spend all my time fighting for the ability to entertain, but not entertain and not sparkle. So it's, you know, I do think it's important to fight and it's important to work together, but also by continuing to entertain in the face of this intimidation and to be that beacon for all those poor performers and those young performers who are just starting out or wanting to start out in these places that are squashing them as human beings, to be a beacon and be like, you know, get out of here. Come over here, get out of there, come over here. There is a place. And if people are going to keep doing that, I want to also advocate for not giving them federal money. If you are going to do that and you are going to take away people's rights, I don't want my taxes paying for Mrs. Johnson's lark on her Medicare. You know what I mean? When she's going to vote against me. No offense, just a person in a lark. I wouldn't mind one myself some days.
Well,
sorry, I was a tirade. I hope it was.
No, it was a good tirade.
Well, you've already done our traditional lightning round, so we have something new for you to end the show. So we've done episodes before called Ask a Muni Driver and Ask a Cable Car Gripman, and we want to call this one Ask a Drag Queen. We asked some friends and then ourselves, like, what are your burning questions about being a drag queen? So we're going to take turns. Quick answers. Here we go. How long does it take you to get ready?
2.5 hours.
What goes into creating a great drag name? I think this is difficult because you use your own name.
I think something that is both personal and comical.
Like your own name.
Ah! Touché.
How do you dance, act, and entertain in high heels? And is it something that can be learned from scratch?
Do you want to learn, Peter?
Maybe.
Always start with 3 Advil before you put the shoes on. And, you know, it is something that can be learned. But to dance in high heels, you have to let yourself be sexy. And it's hard for a lot of men dressing up as women to let themselves be really feminine and sexy. But if you can basically loosen up those hips, you're going to be able to dance in heels.
Okay, Peter, get ready.
Where do you get your clothes since the Drag Emporium doesn't exist yet? And do you design your own costumes or do you have a costume designer?
I have a number of fabulous people here in San Francisco that make me custom looks because, you know, I do have a big body and Fashion Nova only goes so far. But no, I do have designers that make most of my clothes. Mr. David Glamamore,
oh, yeah.
Kipper, and Daphne Deluxe are 3 people that make a lot of my clothes. Also Amy Sarah's. And
I've been lucky enough to see you do the quick changes backstage years ago at Project Lohan.
Yes.
And it is as athletic as anything that goes on the stage.
It's true.
Who's your all-time favorite character that you've played so far?
Oh, God, torture. As much as I love Rose Nyland and... and Samantha Jones. I might have to say Frankenfurter.
I saw that. That was amazing.
That from Rocky Horror.
Yes, from Rocky Horror.
And if you don't know that, why are you listening to this podcast?
I've been practicing for that role since I was 12. So.
How do celebrities respond to drag variations of themselves?
Most of them don't like it very much. I find that people, it freaks them out just a little bit. What they appreciate them, but they aren't super warm and fuzzy.
That's disappointing.
I'll take that back. If you're doing a character they played versus you, gotcha. Right? Like Cher doesn't love Cher impersonators that much.
You would know, you hosted her a few years ago.
Yes, she wouldn't let Chad Michaels backstage. So,
the tea is piping hot, Drag Laureate, mother dear. Wow, okay, so for those that follow Drag Race, that's big news.
What goes into a good Samantha Jones from Sex and the City impression? And would you replace Kim Cattrall on And Just Like That because it sucks without her?
First of all, the best way to learn how to do a Samantha Jones impersonation is to watch the cartoon Snagglepuss.
Really?
Snagglepuss basically talks just like Samantha Jones, right?
But door, with like a little list.
The door's open. It's a jar even. Honey, please. Snagglepuss is Kim Cattrall. It's delicious.
I'm never going to watch either of those shows the same way again. I'm going to expect Snagglepuss to go to brunch and Kim Cattrall to drop an anvil on someone's head.
Exactly. So Snagglepuss should join the cast just like that. Of course I want Samantha to come back. And we are doing Sex and the City again. And it's coinciding with the second season of And Just Like That. And I think we're going to play, like, maybe the show's going to open with just three of them. And I'll show up and they won't talk to me. We're going to play with some ideas. Maybe there'll be a Peloton bike somewhere. I don't know.
Well, I have another Drag Laureate question. Do you know where you are on the order of succession at City Hall?
How many heartbeats?
Yeah, how many heartbeats are you away from running this city?
Well, I don't know. I don't know that question. I'm prepared at any moment, like a good drag queen, to take the reins, so to speak.
I don't want anyone to die, but I do think you should be mayor for at least.
It doesn't have to be a death. The mayor leaves and goes overseas and appoints a mayor for the day.
Yeah. Exactly.
That happens.
I kind of would like to see you and Tongo Eisen Martin, the poet laureate, together in some kind of a Mad Max co-ruler Thunderdome situation.
Ooh, yeah. I like that. Yeah. I like that. I mean,
you would be the Tina Turner, obviously.
Obviously. I don't know where I am there, but I would.
Mayor Jollinger sounds good.
It really does. It really does.
Well, I was at Heclina's memorial service, beautiful service, but one very happy thing that happened was that you announced that the Golden Girls will live on.
Yes.
So do you want to break some news? Who is the new Dorothy?
Well, we're still working on that. And it has been, it's very big shoes to fill. And I feel like in a lot of ways it needs to be someone that can really join the family affair. Obviously, we do need to make that call soon and get things going. But we will be back, and I can... guarantee it's going to be a heartfelt tribute to Heclina, but I do think from some of the conversations I've been having, I think that it's going to be a nice surprise.
Ooh. Might we get a reality show? Who Wants to Be the Next Spornak?
I think the Finding Dorothy reality show.
Everyone's a friend of Dorothy.
Would be great.
But do you want to be the next Dorothy?
Exactly, exactly. But we had talked a number of times, joking as a whole group about as the show had become bigger than all of us at this point, you know, and it's just going to keep going and going after all of us are gone. Because, you know, it really is one of those things that feels like all these, you know, young people, like these 20-year-olds or the kids that come see it, are like all going to grow up and they're going to want this tradition. And I think this is going to be, you know, I don't know who, forgive me for not being smart enough to know who wrote the Nutcracker or who created the Nutcracker, but
Tchaikovsky
wrote the music.
Thank you.
Based
there we
on
go.
A Russian fairy tale.
Okay. Well, they're not alive anymore, and it keeps going. Yeah. So I think the Golden Girls. Like,
I didn't know either, Darcy.
Okay, thank you. it's okay. I don't feel so bad now. I gotta go.
Well, thank you so much for having us. Can you send us out with either the voice of Rose or Samantha? It's your choice.
I think we can all join in now that we've had this.
Exactly. Exactly. Oh, honey, I've had such a great time on this podcast. We've got to do it again. How about lunch at Samba?
Let's go.
Thanks, Darcy. Or should I say Drag Gloria?
Oh, my God.
Oh, it's contagious.
Exactly. No, mayor.
Exactly. Drag queen. Drag Gloria, even. No.
Well, thank you so much, and congratulations again.
Thank you so much for having me, and I hope I didn't talk your ear off.
You were
awesome.
Have your earrings on.
Oh.
Thank you. That was awesome.
Thank you for listening to the San Francisco Chronicle. Our music today is from the Sunset Shipwrecks, Castro organ player David Hegarty, and cable car bell ringing from 8-time champion Byron Cobb. Support Total SF in the newsroom that creates it by investing in a digital Chronicle edition. It's less expensive than you think at sfchronicle.com/pod.